Welcome to Buena Vista. It's a bonus episode. Thank you for your time and your money. And good night.
Good night. We've got your money either way.
You put down your details.
That's right. We've got them now.
You're on the hook. You're on the hook. And as far as we know, there's no way to stop those payments.
I'm on the hook for so many things, I've got to tell you. And yeah. There is one way for me to stop my payments, and that is for me to literally remember the things that I'm paying for out of my credit card and then call them up and get them to stop. But because my brain is made of cheese, I don't. I can't remember. Thinking about how wealthy I'd be if I just cancelled the things that I'm signed up for that I don't use.
Many huge
idiot.
I don't have that many things. We've got like Netflix and Stan.
Yeah.
Which is reasonable.
Stan got me on the hook because I wanted to watch John Wick. That's how they get you. Huh. And so I signed up for a trial thinking, oh, I'm going to cancel this the moment that I finish watching the movie. And then I forgot.
I think I default to Netflix so much that I don't actually give Stan a fair enough shake. Because Stan's got a whole bunch of good shit that is not on Netflix. Yeah. And the more I use Australian Netflix, the more I'm like, this is actually really fucking limited.
Yep.
It's either that or...
Good for movies, Stan.
Well, and by virtue of my own watching habits, the only thing I am ever shown is like the same sort of pool of 50 bad action movies.
Sure.
But I got Netflix and Stan. I iTunes family membership thing.
Oh, that seems like a weird thing to have.
Oh, so it's the Apple Music family subscription.
Yeah.
So it's like $10 a month or something for one person, and like $17 a month for six people.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the model.
Yeah, it's just me and my wife.
Hmm.
And Patreon things, and the handful of people I support via Patreon.
Yeah, which feels like a good thing to do.
Yeah, but even then, there's some people where every now and then I'm like, do I still want to do this particular one? I haven't listened to the show in however long, yeah. But I suppose that's part of the Patreon model is that like, there are plenty of people who do it specifically because they want to support the endeavor and not necessarily because it's just about the extra content that you're getting. So like, there are definitely people that I've subscribed to where I'm like, I have not listened to an episode of this in 12 months.
Yeah, for sure.
But I still appreciate this person and what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the same with YKS, I guess. I haven't come back to that in a long while, and but still chipping in.
I got to keep my podcast rotation pretty small.
Yeah, that's right.
If I want to, otherwise I start like missing episodes of things and the completest part of my brain starts to kick in and get upset.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like I need to keep a handful at most of shows that I'm listening to all the episodes of, because as soon as I stop listening to some episodes of something, I get all out of whack. My precious brain.
Speaking of podcasts, I mean, I've been listening to Revolutions, pretty much full time since I started listening to it a couple of months ago. There are an absolute shitload of episodes. I would really highly recommend it for people that actually like history podcasts, which I didn't know that I did until I listened to this one. It's fun to listen to the guy become like more and more radicalized as he kind of does the podcast as well, but otherwise he's pretty like even-handed. But in my travels in listening to this podcast, I'm on the season now that's covering the Spanish-American War of Independence or Revolution.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one.
Which is badass. And I listened to an episode and I thought of you, Andrew. Because we've previously discussed your love of scams.
Mm-hmm.
You love a good scam, right? Who are we talking about scam artist-wise? Do you remember?
I'm trying to remember, but to me, it's like anytime that someone gets like bilked out of several hundred thousand dollars because they thought they were going to get rich.
Uh-huh.
That's a delight to me. Yeah. Anytime somebody is able just through their wily ways and their way with words is able to convince a stranger on the back of absolutely no evidence to give them $20,000 of their savings. That always just makes me go, that's a pretty powerful soft skill you got there, and I think you earned the money.
Hold that thought.
Mm-hmm.
That thought in particular, please. Just keep that in the back of your mind. Now, I think like we should probably like say straight up, it's actually not fun when like poor people get scammed and they give away their whole life savings and they die and what have you. But
I guess not.
But as far as like an absolute tool of turning hubris into failure, being dashed upon the rocks, it is the scam. You can't go past a good scam, right?
I always think of it in that particular way, which is like you wouldn't be able to get someone to do a scam if they weren't being greedy. Basically, yeah. I think that the vast majority of the time, there are absolutely ones where like. I'm sure there are a lot of ones where, like, you know, I'm sure there are people who, like, bilk people out of, like, charity donations and shit like that.
Yeah.
Obviously looking to exploit people's sympathy
I think but the people, yeah, the ones that are funny.
Majority of them are somebody saying, hey, did you know that through this thing that for some reason no one else is doing, you could give me a little bit of money and get a lot of money
A lot of money back.
Foolproof.
And the money that you give to me, the more lot of money I give you back. So,
well, it's the same principle in essence as like anybody who's watching TV late at night and is watching an infomercial and sees like a weird rickety looking thing that does like assisted sit-ups. And all the models have like jacked up massive pecs and biceps and shit.
And there's just that like reptilian response of going like, that could be me.
Hmm. Oh,
you could have the abs.
You slide it under the bed and it doesn't take up any room. And all you do is you do some of these sit-ups while you're watching your stories on TV. And then you'll just get really super shredded. And it's really easy and anyone can do it. Although for some reason, no one's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll work for you.
It will work for you.
It'll work for you. Three easy payments.
Hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah. So, I'd like to tell you about the very abbreviated life of Gregor McGregor, if I can, Andrew.
It's a great name to start with.
It's a phenomenal name, with the caveat that, as we've covered, my brain is made of cheese, and I am very bad at remembering facts. So, it'll be the Theo version of it. But he's a wonderful character, who I, absolutely adore. And I think maybe one of the true, sociopaths on, that have ever like roamed, like an actual proper sociopath. So he's this Scottish guy, who was an absolute renowned bullshit artist. And he talked like the daughter of nobility into marrying him at a very young age. Her parents absolutely hated this guy because he was this poor nobody who was a massive bullshit artist, but they married anyway. He got
their daughter's scumbag Steve boyfriend.
Absolute scumbag Steve boyfriend. He got a huge dowry from it, purchased a captaincy, went and fought in the Spanish War, fought for a brigade that later went on to fight a really famous battle, quit before that battle, deserted before that battle, and fucked off to South America for the Venezuelan War of Independence and that sort of thing going on. Proceeded to tell everybody that he was part of that battle that battalion waged, or that he was one of those famous kind of crew without like actually saying, oh, no, actually deserted before that point.
Well, why would you tell him that part?
That's right. Had like one military victory as a captain, and then got like put in charge of a whole bunch more, and then proceeded to be like the hugest coward Just a wonderful coward. That's not the point of the story, but I still find it very funny that they were like, they were in a town and it was attacked one evening, and he rolled what is told is basically straight out of the window into the ocean, and then swam on a piece of driftwood across to one of the three waiting gunships, and was like, no, I'm just going to go and we'll get the gunships and we'll bombard and it'll all be good. And then those three gunships proceed to just fuck off.
He gets on board and says, cheese it.
There's a pretty scammy thing that he ran up in Florida that I totally forget the details of, so I won't bother you, but eventually his name became Mud, and he eventually went back to London. Before he went to London, he went to a place in Nicaragua called the Mosquito Coast, which is a disgusting, uninhabitable place. There's
a movie about that starring Harrison Ford.
Really?
Called The Mosquito Coast.
There was a tribe living there, and the leader of that tribe had been crowned king by the British, so that the British had some stake in the area versus the Spanish. And he managed to talk the king into selling him something along the lines of 32,000 square kilometers of land for like a couple of bottles of rum and some jewelry.
Nice.
So he proceeds to take this 32,000 square kilometers of land to London, where he, and on the journey over, he writes a full like system of government, designs like a coat of arms, writes a whole like tale of a visitor kind of, or an explorer landing there and finding all of these wonders, that there's gold in the river, all this sort of stuff, gets that like bound in a book and printed off and distributed. And then gets an anthem written for this place, and he calls it Poye. And he lands in London and he presents himself as the Prince of Poye. He goes about selling huge amounts of land in Poye to people that, you know, and promising riches, and it's like the most bountiful place you've ever seen. And just obviously just selling like
Just tracts of swamp.
Just tracts of swamp and uninhabitable jungle and what have you.
Pardon me.
So this is the part where you need to recall the
scams are funny.
Scams are funny part, I guess. To make it seem like he's like this place, which includes a like 20,000 person capital, by the way, called Saint Joseph, which doesn't exist. So to prove that this is like a worthwhile investment, he has to get settlers. So he signs several hundred settlers up. He goes up and like loads them on boats, goes up to them, shakes their hand, says, thank you for your service. And then seven boats sail across the ocean full of people expecting to settle in a new land, in a country named Poye that doesn't exist, in a city called St. Joseph that doesn't exist. And they land. So the first boat lands and the captain immediately goes, huh, we've been fucking had. But like everyone just sort of settles down. And he's like, well, I can't tell anyone yet because they'll just kill themselves. So I may as well just have a little sail around to see what I can find. And everyone's like, yeah, this is a bit weird, but let's just see where this goes. And the captain comes back and says, no, we've been had. And everyone's like, no, we haven't. No, it's just over, St. Joseph is just over that hill somewhere. In the meantime, the second boat arrives and there's something like 200 people now on this beach on Mosquito Coast, just like looking for anything at all. And then the rainy season hits and yellow fever starts setting in, malaria starts setting in, and like this British ambassador was sailing on the way past and saw some people on there and like yo, what the fuck are you guys doing? And like, oh, no, we're just looking for St. Joseph. And he's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Get off that beach. You're going to die. In the end, something like 200 people died. The Spanish had to start turning. So the Spanish intercepted the rest of the 5 boats and they turned them around and sent them back to London. But like they tried to evacuate the couple of hundred people that were on the coast to America, but most of them just died, right? They all just died of yellow fever. So this guy's like racking up a body count on his on his scam. And then people like start going, hey, maybe there's something wrong here. And he goes, yeah, so the thing about that is my wife is sick and we need to go to Italy. And then they went to Paris, not Italy. His wife is not sick, obviously. And then he proceeded to run the same scam in Paris. He just rewrote it a bit so it was no longer about a monarchy because they were all very revolutionary at that time. And he ran pretty much exactly the same scam. Fortunately or unfortunately, nobody really kind of signed up for this one, and the French government found out about it, and they arrested him, and one of his co-conspirators ran off to the Netherlands with like all of the documentation that was incriminating and what have you. And McGregor was like, oh, no, it was that guy. And they all went, oh, okay. And they
that's,
went.
That's and they the best move.
And they arrested the other guy. And he ended up being in prison for like 10 years.
Oh,
right?
Yes.
McGregor
I think you're thinking of that guy.
That guy. I've been had as well, right? He leaves Paris because he's like, oh, this jig is up. Goes back to London and runs the same scam again.
God damn.
Eventually, people are like, they weren't like, oh, this guy's a scam artist. They were like, oh, the bonds he sold last time didn't get a very good return due to everybody dying of malaria. So this one probably won't give you any money. And he was like, oh, okay. And then he eventually went back to Venezuela and died. Probably like the highest body count on any scam outside of Bush knocking down the towers.
God damn.
Truly, if you shoot for the moon and miss, you'll still end up killing several hundred innocent people.
In fairness to those people, like, at least they lived in a time where you couldn't just Google,
like, Poirier. Oh.
Google, hey, this isn't a country. What's going on, buddy? Whereas, like, anybody getting super had by a scam now, I'm just like, well, come on.
Yeah,
little investigation.
2 minutes of, that's right.
Check out the reviews on this thing.
That's right. Throw that in your DuckDuckGo and see what's up with it.
I'm just genuinely fascinated by people like, you know, Frank Abagnale Jr. I'm sure
Who's
I've brought
guy?
Him up as an example before. Have you seen the movie Catch Me If You Can?
I haven't. We have discussed, though, that's the one with...
For Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, he's blurry on the cover. He's running from something. Probably the tangled web of lies that he is.
That's true. He's running away from Tom Hanks, who is the poor put upon FBI agent who spends years trying to catch him. Mm-hmm. And but like, just I think, you know, like if people haven't seen that movie, get out there and see it. It's great stuff. Steven Spielberg, can't go wrong. Christopher Walken, great performance as the con man's dad that he learns lots of shady shit from. But like, just the whole sort of aspect of it, of getting to a point where a particular con kind of runs dry and just going, huh, what if I just said this to someone else instead?
Yeah, like, I mean...
Just pivoting and going straight into another thing.
I think there's fundamentally two kinds of cons, right? There is one where, which I would call the Steve Buscemi in Fargo con, where
someone just tries to do one thing and fucks it up.
One thing, right? And then you have to fix that by making your next mistake, right? Which I guess is sort of
the good and proper web of lies type.
The web of lies thing, which is what Bernie Madoff falls into, right? Where, you know, Bernie Madoff was a Ponzi scheme, right? The biggest Ponzi scheme in history, where to make the books balance today, he had to oversell what was going to happen tomorrow, and he just kept doing and doing and doing it until, you know, eventually he couldn't, you know, kite checks for long enough for it to kind of happen, and he goes, oh, no, I'm fucked. And then you just kind of give it up. Or the person that's the second kind, which is just, you know, like you were describing, just ready to pivot to the next lie. Just going, well, that's my turn to slip out the window and hop on a horse in the dead of night and go on to the next town.
Well, and that's what's kind of amazing about it in that movie. He starts off trying to cash a check. And they say, oh, no, this needs to be, you know, like signed off or whatever. He's trying to sort of forge a bunch of checks and get them like paid out in cash at different banks, and mm-hmm. so like he has some success, like sweet talking different clerks and stuff like that. But they basically say like, somebody says to him at some point, he sees an airline pilot in the bank, and they say, oh yeah, you know, the airline writes their checks for them, so they just pay them straight out as payroll. You know, and he goes, oh, and just like goes to a uniform shop and gets them to make up a pilot's uniform and says, I'm a pilot. And just like walks into banks and goes, hey, here's my check from payroll. And they go, cool, Mr. Pilot, sir, thank you for your business. Because it was the 60s and people were like, pilots. Oh, very respectable profession.
Nobody, there's no chink in that armor, I would say, as far as process-wise.
Except that this extends all the way to him coming in and saying like, oh, I need I need some stuff cashed by payroll or whatever. And they go, oh, are you my deadhead? And he goes, yes. And they say, all right this way. And they take him onto a plane and sit him down. And so the first time he's like ever been on a plane and flown anywhere, he's just like a pilot catching a ride in the cockpit with the pilot and co-pilot, and he winds up just jet-setting all over the world, paying for everything with these fraudulent checks, and then as soon as they're onto him, he just goes, all right, now I'm a doctor, and, like, makes himself a fake degree, gets a job running, like, the emergency room at a hospital in the South. Like, the extent to which he was, like, on planes, running a hospital, and all this sort of shit. And he did it all before he was like 20, which is mind bending to anybody over the age of 20, I think. Really good movie. I absolutely recommend it. Folks, we're just going to take a break in between movie chat for a can check because I need to do an update about something.
Oh, man. You have caught me with my pants down.
Oof.
And my hand empty.
Pants down, dry dick over there.
Mm.
Well, I'm drinking a very, very cheap Hollandia premium lager. It's a good $30 slab right there, folks.
That is too cheap of a slab.
No, I'm telling a lie. It was $34. But I also had been drinking some Sky Vodka. Can't remember where that's from. But the reason I bring this up is because somebody pointed out to me that I myself have been the victim of a scam. Several episodes ago, I was talking about the vodka I was drinking, and I was saying, yeah, Mishka, it's this French vodka, which I had purchased. Nicely designed bottle, nice typeface on the logo and everything. And somebody commented on something and was like, Mishka is trash. And then had posted a photo of what is, of course, the very familiar to me, incredibly cheap bottle of hooch, like, you know, the plastic half-size hip flask-shaped bottles
mm-hmm.
of vodka that you can get. Absolute bathtub cleaner shit called Mishka, and I recognized it. I have just been 1,000% had by a brand update.
That's how they get you.
Yep. I just went, oh, this looks nice. And then I went, this costs $30 and it's fine. But it is absolutely just an old dog shit brand of vodka, Mishka.
But so is this the point where you enter the denial stage of the phase where you're, of the scam, where you're like, no, it's actually good and I like it.
Oh, it's definitely an improved recipe, I tell myself.
Uh-huh.
It's absolutely not. It's definitely just some cheap vodka. But that's fine. I had a cold last week, so I was just loading up my orange juice. Because that's how you cure yourself, you know?
With vodka.
Yeah, and vitamin C.
Hmm.
Those two things simultaneously. And so back to movie chat. I understand, Theo, that you watched a well-known film from 1999 recently, and you wanted to give us your thoughts about it.
I absolutely did. So I think it's actually beautiful to me that men have been forcing their wives to watch The Matrix for 20 whole years now.
Babe, it's so cool.
It's so good. Like, I mean, it sounds dumb, right? But listen, right? It's actually cool as shit. And of course, I haven't seen it in years and years, right? Since watching it like 400 times in uni. Did you catch it at the cinemas when it came out?
It's a good question. I want to say yes. I'm going to say yes. My most specific memory actually of watching The Matrix was my friend in high school, Marco Mack. His dad had like a giant, you know, the fucking giant terrible rear projection TVs.
Uh-huh. Yep.
So he had a gigantic one of them and a big fuck off surround sound system with a huge subwoofer.
Yep, you get that DVD. It's going 540p. There's blocks are popping.
Yep, and they would buy all the DVDs when they came out. So mm-hmm. I have very particular memories of like a range of movies that I watched a bunch of times at this guy's house in Canberra when I was like in high school, and I definitely remember watching The Matrix up in that bitch.
Hmm.
But as to whether I saw it in the cinema, I'm going to have to flip a coin on that one. I'm going to say yes. I feel like I had that that definite sense of like when you first see Neo fly away at the end and Rage Against the Machine kicks in.
You're
and
like, hell yeah.
I'm awake. I'm awake for the first time.
This is the first day of the rest of my life.
That's right.
I'm happy to announce it absolutely still whips ass. Like, it whips an absolute maximal amount of ass. In a way that, you know, I think a lot of the Hollywood blockbusters since have absolutely failed to capture. And I think appreciably, it's only a couple of things that do it. And it's one, they spent months training the actors to fight.
Mm-hmm.
And then two, they let them fight and they didn't cut 6,000 times. Although there mm-hmm. is one exception to that rule, which is Mad Max Fury Road. But you're not George Miller, so you can't do it. And three, the bits where they kind of integrated sort of the Japanese, you know, style and the Hong Kong sort of ballet-esque battles of John Woo and that, all that sort of stuff with the American technophilia that was, you know, soaring at the time, are all really well done and they're still really cool, and I don't know how that is. The CG has aged a little bit, but the bits where they're like, yeah, so he's going to like come out and he's going to be shooting, but it's in slow motion, somehow don't suck now, 20 years on. And I don't know. Do you know why that might be? I'm not sure.
I'm just assume that it is. I think I feel like the Wachowskis are kind of like a really, really accelerated version of my criticism of Peter Jackson.
Sure.
Which is that Peter Jackson had his sort of original run of movies in which he was wildly creative with very limited budgets for various things. And then sort of hit that point of he got entrusted with Lord of the Rings being a huge enterprise. Massive, massive hit. And for every subsequent entry in that series and film that he has done post that, he has just had unlimited funding at his fingertips, and it's absolutely ruined him. I do wonder about whether the Wachowskis were the kind of really fast incubated version of that, where they had this one huge success. I think we can all agree that the sequels are basically like just diminishing returns as they go on.
They're garbage, and they lose
the degree to which they fall off a cliff in terms of both like I guess quality and coherence more than anything else. Like to me, the first Matrix movie was something that like, you know, stupid armchair philosophers could sit and ponder about in a mm-hmm. way that was accessible to people. Like, you know, I mean, it was basically the early version of Joe Rogan talking about what if we're all in a simulation type shit. Except once it went past that and started to get into like, I don't know, all the quasi-religious stuff by the third one.
It's
just painful, painful shit.
And I think that's like definitely the section of it that has aged the worst.
Yes, that and just... Now, the last time we were talking about The Matrix, the last time The Matrix came up, or that I was ragging on it, I cited the fight at the end of the third one between Neo and... Agent Smith.
Mecha Smith, yeah.
And there's a billion Agent Smiths standing around. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, that CGI looks shit when they're all like flying around in the rain and stuff. And they've, you know, done the painstakingly detailed CGI models of their faces that they're punching in slow motion and stuff. And somebody wrote in and said, you idiot, you fool. They filmed all of that stuff on a sound stage with the rain pouring and a big crowd of Hugo Weaving lookalikes standing around in suits.
They
and all
did
this
not.
Shit. I think that, like, you know, obviously all the shit where they're, like, flying between the buildings, like, actually Superman-style flying, you can see all that stuff that's CGI. But, like, yeah, it's just like so many things, the more and more CGI gets layered on. I mean, that's why so much of the Star Wars prequels look like shit now. Just age so terribly.
Yeah.
And of course, you can look at everything that the Wachowskis have done since then has sucked as well.
Yep. But I think...
Have you seen Jupiter Ascending?
I have not seen Jupiter Ascending. I'm not going to subject myself to Wachowski.
You sure you don't want to see Channing Tatum as a half-wolfman space cop with like hover boots?
Actually, I'm not sure. I don't want to see that.
It's a like you can really see how they were trying to like do another Matrix type franchise sort of thing, but it all falls very flat. Like very very similar themes in that Mila Kunis's character is, I guess, she's like the reincarnation of a queen or a leader or something of another planet. It turns out that there's like interstellar travel and different societies on different planets and all that sort of stuff. They're all just massively evolved beyond Earth, and that they harvest humans and other beings from planets and stuff in order to make the stuff that they can use to like reverse the aging process and effectively make themselves immortal.
Sure.
So it still boils down to humans being used as batteries of some kind against their will. thematically.
Yeah.
Is what it comes down to. Problem is that they have Mila Kunis starring in a like lead dramatic role. Stop scratching the carpet, Couscous. Come on. Unbelievable.
Well, see, your first mistake was having carpet.
Yeah, I guess.
Ours is floorboards all the way through, baby. Let's see you try and scratch that. Although, when we worm gnome, it's like a little squirty. Looks like a tiny little tube of toothpaste, right? Do you do this with Couscous?
What?
So, because Gnome likes to eat geckos, we have to worm her constantly.
Oh, yeah.
And there's these little tubes. They're like a tiny tube of toothpaste. And you kind of have to sneak up on Gnome and get like right up close and then squirt the whole lot on in like the small of her back or like between her shoulder blades sort of thing before she realizes what's going on. And she hates it. But this stuff, I don't know, like, it's not good because if I ever miss or she, like, shakes and gets some on the ground, it just goes straight through the varnish on the floorboards. So there's all these little spots throughout the house where there's, like, a little circular spot where her worm medicine has just gone straight through the varnish and dissolved it. So... cool.
Wonderful.
I'm enjoying putting that on my cat. Anyway, it is an absolute betrayal of her trust of me, and takes her about 20 days to trust me again. So given another 10 days, she's dumb as hell and ready to be sprayed again.
Poor cat. That's all I can say to you, sir. Should we see... We need like a musical sting for our new segment. What's in the news?
Uh-huh.
Would you like to know what's in the Tasmanian news, Theo?
What's in the news these days, Andrew? What's going on? Have I seen this? Have I heard about this?
I bet you haven't seen it, nor have you heard about it. Growing giant pumpkins in Tasmania like an extreme sport, says farmer, hoping for a new record.
Mm-hmm.
This is from ABC News. Sorrel farmer and self-described extreme grower Shane Newitt is on a mission to break Australia's record for the heaviest pumpkin. Now, Theo, what to you constitutes a heavy pumpkin?
All right, so I'm picturing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Picturing one of the big ones. What are the big ones called? Are they Jap pumpkins?
One of the big boys, big boppers.
These aren't like our weird orange American ones. These are the huge, fucked up green things. They look like pepperoni with botulism.
No, this looks like an orange pumpkin.
It's an orange one? Hmm. See, that's what I think of the big, big round flat ones when I think of a heavy one. You can't see, but I'm making arm motions like I've got a heaving set of norks. And I'd say a heavy one of them goes for about 7 kilos.
So your idea of like a world record setting...
Oh, no, world record would be like 7.5.
Kilos?
Kilos, sure. Not okay. Stone, unless... What's a stone? Is that a lot?
I don't even want to get into that.
7.5 kilos.
The record is currently 743 kilograms.
No, it isn't.
But Mr. Newitt, who has held the Tasmanian record for 2 years running, is confident the pumpkin he has been growing for the past 6 months out the back of his house may just smash it.
That is giving me anxiety.
It's as big as a car, really. My first car weighed less than the current record holding pumpkin. My first car was a Honda Z360, which is a little two-door hatchback with a two-cylinder Honda motorbike engine in.
Oh, hell yeah. I'm looking awesome it up stuff. Now. Hang on, where are we? As hell.
If you search for Honda Z360 on Google Images, you will see a picture of my old car.
Your exact one?
Yes, my actual one.
Really?
It is yellow with a black stripe down the side.
Huh. I'm not. I don't think I'm seeing the same ones as you on DuckDuckGo. But
God,
it reminds me immediately of the three-wheeled car from Mr. Bean.
Yes, yes, it's that type of thing. Extremely, extremely small, very light, less than this pumpkin, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So 743 kilos. Currently measuring 1.8 meters wide and 1.2 meters high and deep. Mr. Newitt believes this pumpkin will beat his record from last year. We're hoping to get a personal best this season and beat my old state record, which was 455.5 kilograms, and at the moment, this pumpkin is taking good enough figures to achieve that, Mr. Newitt said. At the moment, it's tapering somewhere around the 600 kilogram mark.
Fucking hell.
It looks like we may have achieved it, but we won't know until we hit the scales. The pumpkin, which has been named T.A. Tank, will be weighed next Saturday at the Brim Creek Show. The official weight will be recognized around Australia. I've managed to grow the heaviest fruit for 2 years in a row, and if this one beats 499 kilos, it will be the third year in a row I've achieved that, says Mr. Newitt. My God.
That is the most Tasmanian thing I've ever heard.
Just the biggest fucking...
It's like our own little Britain. Down there, isn't it? They're just doing their own thing down there, making huge pumpkins and driving quaint little cars with horns that go.
Would you like to know the tips and tricks for growing a 700 kilo pumpkin?
Please lay them on me. I've got some pumpkins out back actually, and they're not 700 kilos. They're a normal size, like six. Christ.
Mr. Newitt's tricks to his growing include dusting the pumpkin with baby powder every morning, which he says reflects the sun and keeps the light off the skin of the pumpkin.
Mm-hmm.
He also sets up portable air conditioners to keep the pumpkin cool on warmer days and even plays music from three different stereos to keep vermin away.
Mm-hmm.
At the top of Mr. Newitt's driveway, a fence is permanently locked to, quote, keep intruders out.
This guy takes better care of his pumpkin than I do of my cat. And I love my cat.
Oh, what a sick burn. There have been some devastating setbacks, including the time a bird landed on a prized pumpkin and gently nicked the skin with its talons. The next day, the skin had split open and the pumpkin was lost. Oh, dear.
Wouldn't that break your heart? You're growing a huge pumpkin for some reason that's totally immaterial, and then... Your big pumpkin dies, and you have to do it next year.
Growing your absurd, disgusting, freak, mutant pumpkin. So, that's what's going on in pumpkin news.
Mm-hmm. And basically what's going on in Tasmania, as far as I can tell.
Hmm.
This has been going in the news for the last, 6 weeks down there? Front page news? The Hobart Times?
Oh, it's all anybody's talking about.
Huge pumpkin gets bigger.
Here from the HuffPost, the old HuffPost, HuffPo. Now, you may be wondering, why did they stop having journalists in Australia? I don't know. Let's read this story from Sydney, March 17th. Australia's opposition Labor Party launched a Wastopedia booklet. That fucking sucks.
What?
And Waste Watch website on Thursday, accusing the coalition government of over lavish spending. Shouldn't that be lavish overspending?
Over lavish spending.
What the fuck is going on in this article? Mm. Including $400,000 on, quote, koala and other marsupial related events.
A zoo ticket costs like $30. What
Goddamn.
Are these guys doing?
This government is obsessed with hugging koalas. We've had $400,000, which included Julie Bishop paying $133,000 to fly four koalas to the Singapore Zoo, Opposition Minister Pat Conroy said outside Parliament.
Do they get, like, do they at least fly first class? Is that a good bit? Can we get something out of that?
I'm not sure.
I don't think so. I think it's a bit dry. Let's go on. Let's move on.
The report also flagged the cost of koala hire during the 2014 G20 summit in Brisbane. Oh, in which Prime Minister Tony Abbott famously threatened to shirt front Russian Prime Minister Vladimir Putin. Remember that? Remember when he was just going to deck Vladimir Putin?
Our wonderful, aggressively weird, weirdly aggressive Prime Minister.
Oh, just an absolute cooked bastard. What do you think he was going to do to Putin, you know? Come on.
Yeah, like, I can't imagine that he thought that he would come off looking good in that exchange.
And then I decided to immediately not do it. Oh, so good. Tony Abbott was talking about shirt-fronting Vladimir Putin, but in the end, he spent $24,000 on letting him hug a koala. That's
the classic move I always pull on my enemies as well.
It's a pretty damning back down on that one.
Just give him a koala, and then I'll pay for it as well.
Oh, dear. Hey, wow, these stories are really old. I think the Huffington Post stopped updating their website a while ago. Here's a story from 2013. I feel like that's not that current, if I'm being real with you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, here's a story from 5 hours ago from the Daily Mail. Remember how the Daily Mail's a big piece of shit?
Every day.
The manicure for bad dates? Man, 26, claims a woman's nails reveal if she's a psycho. And he has even made a guide explaining how the color, shape, and length indicate she is dangerous.
Run that by me again. The what and the what?
So, a 26-year-old misogynist has written a pamphlet in which he explains how the color, shape, and length of a woman's manicure show to you that she is a psychopath.
Okay.
By, it says on the front, Survival Guide 101, by / Rocky, 2 / my bros. I really like that they're publishing this story as just like, look at this cute thing a guy did. Telling you that all women with and without fingernails are fucked up.
Check out my misogyny phrenology.
It's gone viral, racking up hundreds of thousands of likes and many grudging words of approval from women.
Yeah, that totally validates my pre-existing things that I've got going on in my brain against women. So, please continue doing that.
Color, he says. This is Rocky breaking down his argument in 3 parts. Color, shape, and length. He says the combination of these 3 things can tell a man all he needs to know about a female romantic prospect. Color, he says, is, quote, the most crucial thing. The fact that can tell you the most about a girl. He includes images of what he considers safe color shades, all of which are natural colors like nudes, beiges, blushes, tans, and greiges. Quote, guaranteed to be safe, you can sleep with 2 eyes closed, you don't have to hold your balls while you're sleeping, and you might expect breakfast in the morning, he says of women wearing these hues.
Cool.
Then he argues there are the be cautious colors, which can be safe or can be dangerous. These include white, black, and a French manicure. Nothing more dangerous than white or black nails.
Mm-hmm.
The dangerous colors, according to Rocky, are green, red, orange, and yellow. Please, bros, I beg of you, get health insurance if you're going to be partying or hanging out with this, he says, before adding that yellow nails are the scariest of the bunch.
So, what's
if she has the courage to... Well, he explains, if she has the courage to get yellow nails, she has the courage to chop up your balls.
Right.
I'm just imagining balls being, like, diced on a chopping board now.
So, what's his method here? What's the What's the experimental method that he's gone through to come to these conclusions?
You're asking for, like, scientific method?
Yeah, yeah, I'm just wondering, like, how he's determined this.
Although Marwan offers a detailed guide on the 12 different shapes of fingernail he believes exist.
Yep, a normal thing that everybody knows.
Oh, my God. He concludes that women who have long nails are giving you a warning sign. You know when you're playing a video game and you get to that last boss? This is the boss, he says. That's good stuff.
That's depressing.
I like for that to be presented as just a story in the news, you know? Love a nice regular news story for normal people.
Mm. Right next to the climate denialism and what else is it? Football hooliganism. They hate football hooligans, don't they?
Hooligans. Who hooligans. Does? The Daily Mail does?
You the mean? Daily Mail. Hmm. I might be thinking of the Daily Telly.
Hey, who feels like some letters?
I'd love some letters.
Mailbag.
As long as they're nice.
Well, I don't know if I'd call this one nice.
Oh, come on.
You remember on the last bonus episode, we had a slight 15-minute diatribe about people taking horrible shits at work.
Yeah.
Friend of the show, Jacobles, I guess is how I'm going to read that.
Sure.
Writes, not necessarily a disgusting work bathroom story, but a weird one for you. Earlier this week, I was doing my business, and someone entered the bathroom and started using the stall next to me. About a minute later, I hear fumbling, the sound of ceramic smashing on tile, and then a hot stream of coffee started flowing into my stall, pooling around my shoes. Anyway, have any of you ever tried to drink a mug of coffee while taking a shit?
All right. Yes, I have.
Oh, okay. And was it ceramic or was it?
I think so, yeah.
Like, it wasn't like a takeaway cup or anything?
No. I think it's ceramic. And
is this the work bathroom or at home?
This is at home. And from memory, that's fair. Caitlin thought it was really disgusting that I would drink coffee on the toilet. And it's like, I haven't started wiping yet. It's not like, there's no crossover. There's no cross-contamination. I've got my process. It's like a finely oiled machine that I push and I drink
and
coffee.
And the coffee is the lubricant, man.
That's right. It just flushes it all out. I got in trouble for that one, and I don't do it anymore.
Yeah, I just feel like my every trip to the toilet is policed now. Like, I go in there, and I sit down. I briefly look at my phone like all normal people. And then, almost immediately, I can just hear people outside. I can hear children going, "Where's Daddy?" And then I can hear my wife going, "Is he in the toilet? How long's he been in the toilet for?" And every time the answer is 75 seconds. So Elna is constantly saying, like, "I don't know what you were doing in there for so long. How long are you spending in the toilet?" I'm like, I get about 3 minutes in the toilet before a child tries to walk in, not knowing I'm in there, or I can hear, like, just a chorus of people commentating on it from outside. I was like, we're talking 5 minutes max. We're not talking anything crazy. And Eleanor's like, "That's too long. You need, like, a five count. You should sit down and then, like, four, five, and you're wiping." And I was like, that's unreasonable. I think that's unreasonable.
That sucks. Look, that's my time. I think I can claim that time at home.
Well, you're a staunch advocate of taking a shit on the company dime.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's fair. If I can put that on the clock, so be it.
For sure.
But yeah, just, I don't know. Don't have any kids if you treasure that time, you know? Folks, please write into the show, heyyouguys@buntavista.com, And just write in with what you feel, without exaggeration, is your average number two time in the toilet, okay? Please let us know if you don't want us to specifically say your name and how long you spend taking a shit. You know, just pop us in like a one or two digit number, if that's all you want to reveal. But if you want to get into the detail of, you know, I take a quick shit and then I spend 15 minutes just kind of zoning out, by all means, I would love some averages to present to my wife to say, look, you got to stop hassling me about this.
Have you ever taken the laptop in?
I used to, but I'm not that guy anymore. I have a phone now. I have a little computer in my pocket.
So, obviously, it's like the ultimate content device, right? But find that it gets your legs very sweaty. And you start sweating on the toilet. It's not a good scene.
Sliding around. And we were talking about... we were talking a lot about Peter in the last two episodes. And I forgot seeing this comment from a friend of the show, Branwen, who writes, I'm vegan and Peter are definitely a punchline at best. Perhaps the South Park of vegans? And I think that's very... It's very apt.
Very apt.
The South Park of vegans. That one's kind of right on the button, you know?
I love it when things are right on the button, Andrew. Ooh. Good to tell you.
I hate it when they're just to the left of the button. Let's see. We do have a question from beloved wife of the show. Oh, friend of the show. Well, that's weird. So, good old Pat Caruana, whose pledge level is between lover of the show and friend and wife of the show, but he's just listed here as a friend of the show. That's why you don't do custom amounts, folks. Yeah. You just do the highest one. Pat says, what do you miss most about me leaving Twitter? I miss not constantly getting tricked by those fucking posts that you and Matt Burke do where...
Oh, man. So, I was trying to remember who the other guy was. Matt got me, like, as you guys will attest, like 2 weeks
Theo
ago.
Theo breathlessly sent a thing to the chat.
Yeah.
Well, oh, my God.
Because, and that's the genius of it, it was about three of the coalition ministers quitting, right? It was on a day when...
was it in like a week where lots of people have been announcing their retirement
exactly
at the election?
Right. Perfectly reasonable reaction for me to just immediately, breathlessly and uncritically paste it in the Facebook chat.
In case you don't know what we're talking about here, there's a handful of people on Australian Twitter that we follow who have developed this fucking terrible... terrible pattern of it's just a niche type of trolling where people go back and find news, like tweets about news stories that are kind of aligned to what's happening at the moment. It's usually about a politician like resigning or saying that they're going to call a leadership challenge or whatever.
The leadership challenge is the classic, I feel.
Any of those sorts of things. And if somebody then quote tweets it and says, wow, you can't see a date on the thing. You just see their post with today's date.
Saying, wow.
Quote tweeting this thing of someone saying, oh, someone's gone to the Prime Minister and told them that they no longer have their confidence or whatever. And I'd just like to say, fuck off, everybody who does this.
Friend of the show, Pat Corona, fuck off.
Well, Pat's already fucked off, so that's the thing I miss, Pat. I miss punching a hole in my fucking monitor every time you get me with one of those fucking things.
He knows what he's done.
Oh, he absolutely knows what he's done. But, like, yeah, the first couple of times, you're like, oh, you got me. And the 15th time, you're like, fuck off. You know? So, yeah, we miss you, Pat. We miss you, big boy.
I appreciate that you yelled that possibly loud enough to wake up your kids as well.
Yeah, they need to know who needs to fuck off. Kids! Kids, get up! Daddy's got to tell you about people who need to fuck off.
If you see a quote tweet by this man, do not believe his lies.
Oh, hey, lover of the show, Aaron asks, Theo, why aren't you doing your schoolwork?
Oh, my God. He's right. He's right.
Well, you've done it now, Aaron.
It's because I'm in denial, Aaron.
Yep. Why put off until tomorrow what you could do next week?
That's exactly right.
Yep. Maybe one last one here from lover of the show, Zdarfan. Is shitlord a gender-neutral insult, or are they both shitlords and shitladies?
I think ladies can be shitlords. I think we're at a point in society now that...
I'm not about to start saying shit dames.
No. And look, I'm going to be a little bit topical here, Andrew, but I think if some, you know, male shitlords need to step down,
ooh,
let some of the female shitlords step up. Non-binary shitlords.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all for it, despite what the government says. They're not about shitlord quotas, but you know what? I think shitlord quotas might be needed.
God damn, that thing from earlier in the week when it was International Women's Day and Prime Minister Scott Morrison gave a speech to like a Minerals Council thing about how women shouldn't be lifted up at the expense of other people.
Yeah, classic.
And it'll look, it's the kind of thing where, like, if you read the full comments and give them a, like, the generous best faith interpretation, he wasn't saying anything especially fucked up. He was, like... Like as in the thing that he was saying wasn't like super rotten at its core. It was like, yeah, we want everyone to be equal and succeed. He just totally managed to not all men it.
Yeah.
He just turned it into like, well, as long as, you know, we don't want other people to be worse off or disadvantaged or anything like that. And like, yeah, the whole point of equality is equality. It's a classic shit where like people go, oh, feminists want women to be in charge of anything and everything and men to be subjugated. And they're like, no, I think a lot of people are just looking for equality. It's right there in the word, right there in the name. And some of us do want women to be in charge, punishing us, keeping us penned up in little mm-hmm. doggy chains.
Yeah, making sure we behave ourselves.
Yep.
And if we don't.
Making us work hard for all of our money, which we then beg to give to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then ideally, once you reach the ripe old age of 45, Rihanna kills you with a katana. That's the world some of us allies are working for. That's all I'm saying.
God. You know how it used to be that people would just wish to be, like, wish to die in their sleep?
Yeah, yeah.
I also wish to die in my sleep, but at the same time,
It'd be pretty cool.
With a katana
it'd be pretty cool to be handcuffed to a dentist chair while Rihanna puts, like, one stilettoed boot up onto your shoulder and then just with two hands plunges a razor sharp katana through your heart in a single stroke.
And yeah. Look, you know she knows how to swing that thing.
Yeah. That's all I'm saying. Give women a chance to swing the katana, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's about all we got time for this evening, folks. Or this morning, if you're listening to it in the morning. And if you are, good morning.
Good morning.
TGIMORT or WORT or F or S, whichever one of those you're listening to it on. Am I right, Theo?
I didn't catch it, but I assume those are all the options.
Pretty sure they are.
Yep.
So, thank you for your time. Thank you for your support. We love and cherish each of you as mm-hmm. though you were our pathetic little piss and pay pigs, and we were Rihanna standing on your balls.
Yep. I, of course, am too nervous to have pay pigs, but Andrew will have mine.
Yeah.
So, if you signed up for that, just know that there is... Behind the scenes, there's a certain amount of redistribution of pay pigs that goes on
mm-hmm.
just to make sure that everything kind of fits with the workload because Andrew does more work, that sort of thing. So, don't assume that, you know, you sign up for the pay pig level and you get to be my pay pig or Ben's pay pig or what have you. It all just kind of gets shuffled around at the back. But, look, we appreciate it and we really enjoy doing it for you.
Hmm.
Not me, though, but everyone else.
Anyway, thanks for subscribing here on PayPigtreon.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see you next week.
See you, buddy.
Bye.